Say, let's look through the window of baseball with Bruce Jenkins of the Chronicle, brought to you by Marvin Windows and Doors and Truett and White, the professional builder's choice. Even down in Monterey, they've expanded down there. Bruce, good morning. How are you?
Hey, Marty. What's going on?
Well, Joe Panic is the next Rogers Hornsby, apparently. I guess that's where we're going.
He's
going
to hit 424 next year. We'll be scrambling into the record books.
Really?
You know, he looks good. He makes you want to root for him. You know, kind of fresh-faced kid. He's enthusiastic. And he looks like a player. You know, the way he goes the opposite way, hitting line drives to left, is a sign of a good hitter. And then, you know, when he hits a homer to dead center, it's like, well, okay, we can add that every now and then. It makes them think that maybe they've got a second baseman and maybe you can check off a category off this massive list of needs they have for next season.
I think so. What impresses me about him is what you just said. He'll go all over the field.
Yeah.
So how do you pitch? Now, of course, they'll figure out a way to pitch to him. He'll see nothing but breaking balls, and that'll be the big test once he shows he can hit the fastball, which it looks like he can. He'll take the outside pitch to left. He'll pull a ball down the right field line, and he's showing some power to center field now. He just missed one the other day when he got, I think, a double or triple. But what I like about him, he's giving him the spark that Scudero gave him, and that's kind of what I like at a time of year with 35 to go. You look for the Hurricane Hazels of the world to come up and do something for you, and he's doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. You can tell the guys in the dugout are way into him. They're really enjoying what he's given them. He's a cut above DeVolg and Duffy and guys like that in the sense that he really does look the part, and there's sort of a look of permanence to him. You know, maybe it's a mirage, but I don't think so. And he's gotten some hits off of tough left-handers. He's stung the ball off some tough left-handers, so it sure looks good for the moment anyway.
Yeah, he's a good eye, a flat swing, and he doesn't look overwhelmed at the plate. You know, you bring up guys and all of a sudden, you know, they have no hope against he's not like that. He sort of gives you good at bat.
And, you know, there's a lot of pressure on him. I mean, all of a sudden he's the second baseman for the Giants, and he's playing with a bad hand.
Yeah.
And he had a great quote. He goes, "When I take the field, I'm not hurt. You know, I deal with it before and after the game, and when I get out there, I'm not injured." And that's a great attitude.
Yeah, I love it. Boy, what a time of year, huh? 35 to go, 32 for the Dodgers, still very close in the loss column, injuries all over the place. It's setting up, we haven't had Giants-Dodgers down the stretch really for a while. I think it's just setting up perfectly.
Well, it is, and I think it's setting up to the point where the Dodgers, I certainly don't see them, you know, having a six-game lead when these games take place. I mean, when you have Greinke complaining about his elbow, not really complaining, but admitting that he's not going to be feeling 100% the rest of the way, that's pretty significant. You know, they've got guys in the DL there. Their rotation kind of right now it kind of boils down to Kershaw, and then we'll see. They had some problems in the bullpen leading up to Jansen. That whole left side of their infield is hurt. So, I mean, they are decidedly vulnerable right now. They seem to mix a good game with a kind of a stinker back and forth, and I don't really see that changing. So, you've got both teams with a bunch of flaws and a bunch of strengths, and it should be pretty tight the rest of the way, which is about all you can ask for.
Yeah, I like it. Bruce Jenkins of the Chronicle with us. The headline in the Chronicle above your three-dot or below three-dot lounge in your name, Castillo's price too high for the Giants. Nothing's too high for the Giants. If they want them, get them. I just think my question is, if Brian Sabin evaluated this, and the quote is in the column today, he's a legitimate leadoff hitting center fielder. If that's the case, and Bruce, come on. I mean, put Pagan in left and put this guy in center. Why not?
It was disappointing to hear that the Red Sox signed
really?
Him. But at the same time, as we've heard about the Sandoval negotiations, and they offered 3 years and $40 million or something, which, of course, is somewhat ridiculous, but the whole five-year contract thing, they're really balking at that now because they've given so many of them out. You know, Pence sort of setting the standard, and it just seems like, you know, and now when I saw 7 years, I knew it was over. Now, I'm not saying I agree with it. And obviously, they have tons of money, but just based on the way they look at things, when it got to 7 years at $70 million, I knew they were out, and that's just the way they look at it. It's hard to tell people how to spend their money. I know they don't want to be the Dodgers. They don't want to have a $240 million payroll and maybe not win. They'd rather sign and develop and everything else. But, you know, in essence, and we've talked about this, I agree with, they have to win one of these. They have to win one of these bidding wars, especially with the Cuban guys coming up, because, you know, one after another, they look great. And this guy appears to be no exception to that. But I just, once I saw those numbers, I thought it was just going to be over.
Well, but all right, let's say they get Sandoval for $75 million, whatever it's going to cost. They're still going to say, well, we need a left fielder, we need a pitcher, we need all this. They're still going to spend a lot of money. And the guys like Chu get $130 million. This is someone who's, I mean,
no, he's horrible.
Sounds reasonable. And and if he could make, you know, and again, they've come from a league where the league is better than maybe we think. They've done well internationally. And I want to know, before I judge this, I want to say, all right, let's sit down. Give me your evaluation before Cespedes was signed, before Puig was signed, before Chapman was signed, before Abreu was signed. And if you tell me in your evaluations these guys are no good, I'm going to find another evaluator, and that's my problem with it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's amazing. All these guys you just mentioned are just they're more than good. I mean, they're extremely special. You know, they've got a guy throwing 100 miles an hour, or a guy, you know, like Puig, he can do anything on a baseball field. And Abreu, instantly, a great hitter, you know, with power. And I don't know, it's really tough. You know, it's I think, you know, looking at it from Sabian's point of view, he trusts guys that have done it before. Sandoval's definitely, you know what you're going to get. You know you're going to get a very good third baseman there. I mean, hell, if they brought back Morse, who's to say Morse wouldn't have a better year than this kid has in Boston?
Yeah.
So it is a gamble. But, you know, they're not really in a position to necessarily just go gambling on everything. They're right in the race, and they could theoretically get back to the World Series. I know it doesn't look terribly likely, but they could, and they want to play it out. And I'm just trying to look at it from their point of view.
Yeah.
You know.
No, I understand they got, you know, as you point out, and you did it beautifully, you know, there's a lot of holes to fill. But in today's world of money in baseball, it's how you evaluate. And I learned that from Don Shula way back when I was in Miami. When Don Shula came in for the Dolphins, I was still there. All of a sudden, he evaluated the players in about 30 seconds. And next thing you knew, he had a winning team and George Wilson was gone. You know, I remember that. And it's how you evaluate your personnel. And again, if this Castillo was evaluated, say, boy, he's a legitimate leadoff hitter, he's a spark plug, he's Kirby Puckett and Ricky Henderson rolled into one, but sorry, we're going to go out and get Ryan Ludwig to play left field, I got a problem with that.
So I'll tell you one thing, we're going to see this kid right away, which is fascinating. Yeah. I mean, apparently he's coming straight to the bigs.
Yes, he is. Well, we'll see, you know, honestly, but for a team that's looking for that spark, you know, they're looking for that spark.
I don't think they're necessarily lacking a spark. When they're going good, guys like Pablo and Pence and Morse, there's a lot of life in that dugout, and there's a lot of belief. And they had a great game last night against the best team in the National League, and things look good again. So I wouldn't be too terribly despondent about the Giants just yet.
All right, no, I'm not despondent, but I hate to see another player of that caliber kind of slip away over what I call millions in a billion-dollar industry. No, I do. So that's how I feel about it.
A little number you like to call millions.
I call it millions in a billion-dollar industry.
And no, so, there's no doubt. They have the money. I think they want to be somewhere between frugal and generous.
Really? All right. Monet Davis, this young lady this week, I watched it. I think it was a great story. She gets knocked out, of course, and throws so hard with that metal bat. All you got to do is kind of put the bat on the ball. Then she went to first base and bobbled one. Then she was in right field with her head hanging down. I said, can't a coach come out and talk to her and say, come on, little chatter from you. You're back in the game. But she was terrific.
Well, she was terrific. I didn't, from what I saw, I wasn't too worried about her demeanor at all. I mean, she's extremely low-key to begin with, and all of a sudden she's the most popular athlete in America, and things went a little down, and she's 13, and I'll let her hang her head out in right field for a little bit. I mean, she's got a good head on her shoulders. She gave a tremendous interview. She sounded like a 25-year-old, you know, mature team player, and obviously has a ton of talent. And it was fun to watch her. It was very enlightening, and it was a great story. And and she'll go back to her life and start playing basketball and probably do better, even better there.
Yeah, it's too bad she kind of falls out of the spotlight now, and I think that was the whole thing. I want to see more of her. I want to hear more of her. It's like Danny Almonte. Remember him? He was like 20 when they let him pitch in the Little Leagues, and then finally got to college, and you heard about him. But, you know, we're not going to hear about her probably for another 4 or 5 years, and she'll be completely different. But it's kind of a nice story to watch. I wish you could watch more of it as she progresses as an athlete. Maybe we will.
Well, I mean, I don't know if personally, I think she's probably glad that the attention's going away and she can get back to her life. I mean, it's one thing to be the center of attention, but to have people following you all around and making you uncomfortable because you're the only one on this team that's getting any notice. And I think it's great for the World Series, but for long term, I know there's the argument that, you know, girls and women don't get enough attention in general, and I think that's absolutely true, but I think there's something to be said to for letting her go back to her life without a TV crew following her around.
Really? That's the world we live.
So what did you have for breakfast? God, looks like you got some little poached eggs going there.
Well, you know, we see it with men or young boys because of LeBron James. You know, you see, you know, you see someone in high school that looks like a LeBron James, and you know his life is over. We don't see it quite as much in the other side, but
which is a little different from being 13, though.
Yeah, it is. You speak from experience. You got one,
yes.
And I understand that. But I thought it was great theater.
I really
watched it. I couldn't wait to see it, and I was rooting for her. I really was.
Oh wow! We certainly were here in this house. I mean, it was tough to choose a team between her team and the team from Chicago, a bunch of African American kids, and that fantastic program they've got going there. The Jackie Robinson program. So, I mean, that was just a great great game to watch all around.
I got into a discussion with Howard Bryant this morning. He was on his way to the U.S. Open, which you've covered many times in New York. Mm-hmm. And I said to Howard, you know, Selig is going out, and, you know, we've had presidents when they leave their term, you know, you get all the pardons. You know, you get like 25 pardons all of a sudden. you know, the last day you're leaving, as you're hitting on the helicopter, you're signing them. So nobody could say anything about it. Could Bud Selig do that with Pete Rose? Could he just do it as he rides off into the sunset, or is he just too visible?
No, I think it's too late. I mean, you can't hold your ground on that, right or wrong, for all these years, and all of a sudden, I was just kidding. You know, let's clean up my legacy a little bit. Maybe get a few more fans on my side. That's not going to happen. I think that falls into Rob Manfred's jurisdiction, and I would love to see it happen. I mean, you know, to let him back into baseball, I mean, you know, he's a shady character for life. I mean, obviously, he couldn't manage anywhere. Anybody who charges for autographs, I find that kind of disgusting unless you're doing it for your food, you know. But to get him on the Hall of Fame ballot is what I want to see because he was one of the greatest players ever, unbelievably inspirational, still the absolute standard for hustle and playing the game hard every day. He should be on the ballot. I really wouldn't want to see him around baseball too much because he is a wrong side of the tracks guy, but he certainly deserves that honor.
Yeah, you know, he is hit leader. But, you know, it's 30 years almost since he got knocked out, 25 years since he got knocked out. You have to be 50 years old to remember him at all. So there's a whole you want to talk about a generation of people who don't even know who he is. You get to know him. He's not going to be a manager in baseball, but he certainly has a lot of opinions on baseball. And I think baseball is worse off without having him in it now. I think he served his sentence, and why not?
Absolutely. He served his time, and it's been agonizing for him because it really does matter a hell of a lot to him. And how much torment can you put him through?
Yeah, and so I say Selig, as he's getting on the helicopter with the Nixon victory signs, you know the sign.
Yeah, oh yeah.
As he gets on, he's signing the paper as he gets on the helicopter heading back to his home in Wisconsin.
Well, I'd love to see it. I wouldn't bet on it, but that would be interesting.
That would be.
Maybe he can eliminate the DH while he's signing.
It's funny. He said the other day, in the best interest of baseball. Boy, what a joke! I mean, you know, they really don't do that. That's a clause that they used years ago. They don't do that anymore.
No, and you know the whole thing that's going on with speeding up the game, you know, the best interest of baseball is that the game moves along a little quicker. I mean, yeah, the kids are falling asleep, but it's the adults who are really ticked off. I mean, seriously. And all the rules are in place. They're sitting right there. You can call a ball on a pitcher who's taking too long to throw. You can call a strike on a hitter who's taking too much time out of the box. It's sitting right there. That's the best interest of baseball.
How do you like baseball in Washington right now? It's really, I mean, just, isn't it pretty good?
I was really hoping that they would beat the Cardinals last year, because somehow over all these years, I think I've counted them up. I've been to 48 ballparks in my life, major league parks. Never have been in Washington, D.C. for any reason. And I was really hoping that they would beat the Cardinals and the Giants would have played them in the playoffs. And I just, you know, I love what Matt Williams is doing. You know, Jason Wirth, he's the king of the beards. But 75% of guys with beards are a joke. But this guy is the real thing. You know, you got Harper in there trying to reestablish his reputation. Heck of a pitching staff.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting team. And I'm really enjoying what they're doing. It looks like they'll get in the playoffs again, and that's a good thing.
Lincecum goes for number 100 today. How about that? Two-time Cy Young, world champion, no hitters, and he goes for the milestone of 100. I think it's I don't know where he ends up in the timeline of Major League Baseball pitchers, but it would be nice to see him get 100 wins.
Yeah, it's amazing to think about, you know, what an iconic figure he's been and absolutely beloved and for all the right reasons, and just now coming up on 100,
yeah.
You know, where Phil Niekro won 300.
I know, think
about
it. Have
anything close to this kind of stuff, charisma or panache or anything else. And it just, you know, it makes you realize that if you're talking about the Hall of Fame, you're really, it's almost a little bit comical to put him in there, but every other quality that a pitcher has to endear himself, he's always had. He takes the ball in any situation, even the most unorthodox ones, and he's Tim Lincecum. We all know what we're talking about here. And I hope he finishes with 200.
Well, he's almost like a mailman, rain, sleet, or snow, but not humidity.
Yeah, and who knows? If the Giants get in the playoffs, they might see him in the bullpen again.
Yeah, it's a great story. Great story.
Yeah.
Of the Giant pitchers in the San Francisco era who have won 100 games, there's only four: Marichal, Perry, Mike McCormick, and Kirk Reeder. That's it.
Wow. I would have thought that in San Francisco. Yeah,
yeah.
I'm not talking about Christy Mathewson Rube Marquardt and Hubble.
Right, no. Sal Magna.
Yeah, that is interesting. And it does put him in the you know, what's your all-time San Francisco Giants rotation? You know, I mean, Matt Cain has to be in there for sure. But Lincecum would be in that argument, along with the guys you just mentioned and some others.
Well, we'll see what he does today. He's got him. Yeah. I always say step up big. It's another big game with 35 to go. And, one, you're an underdog against the Nationals team with Zimmerman and Strasburg tomorrow. It'd be nice to see him come out and give you a real good game.
Absolutely. Yeah, today is the most important thing of all.
Yeah. Hey, Bruce, thank you so much, and talk to you tomorrow morning. Early tomorrow. We start at 8 o'clock tomorrow.
I'll be up. Thanks, Marty.
All right, thank you. All right, that is the wonderful Bruce Jenkins.